You're listening to another episode of
Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott.
All right, Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott. I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And this is episode 145.
145, John.
And we're back in the studio again.
Again, John.
I'm trying to do my best morning talk show, the Morning Zoo voice.
The Morning Zoo, that's right, John. I got some bad news for the zoo.
What's that?
I'm not going to be able to do a podcast next Sunday. I'll be out of town.
What? Again?
Yeah.
What the fuck? You're like,
hey, what happened to the zoo?
You said it was the last time, man.
Well, it was the last time for the schedule for stuff. And then this is a family thing that came up. A family.
What do you mean came up?
I'll be up in the Great North Woods.
Ugh.
I don't think they have broadband up there, but they do have some sort of network accessibility. Maybe I could Skype in. Worst case scenario, I can call.
This
you
is
know?
Totally unacceptable.
I can call.
Yeah, right. We've tried that before. I can't do it. That's what I get.
We'll start reaching out to Zach. Zach would be a good co-host. There's a couple of listeners that emailed in that said they would love to co-host.
What do I got to do there? What are you,
Skype?
Like Letterman or something? You're down with a heart surgery? And I got to bring in...
I could be.
What's up with that?
We may be able to
bring
do something...
Jerry Seinfeld?
We may be able to do something on a Tuesday
Why
night.
Why am I always yelling?
If you're available...
I'm Jerry Seinfeld!
On the Tuesday night, we could put something together then.
Yeah.
And then we could just post
you
the Tuesday night.
You ever see that Frank Cavalletti or whatever his name is?
Mm-mm.
He does a Jerry Seinfeld. Hey, I'm Jerry Seinfeld! Why am I always yelling? That's his imitation.
Yeah?
Yeah. Tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, why am I not funny? Why doesn't he say that?
Why am I not funny?
All right, moving on, John. A lot of things happened since our last podcast, The Great 144.
Oh, yeah. Big show. We played a huge benefit. Played some alternative music.
Alternative, yeah. That's right, for a charity event at Edison Park Inn.
Yeah.
Wow. One of the things we found out the night before was we would be playing on the second floor,
yeah.
John, which...
Yeah, let me explain this, how this goes down,
that
too.
That totally blows.
You call me.
Yeah.
And you say, hey, man, I got some good news. Hey, man. That's exactly how you sound, too. Hey, got some good news and bad news. I went there, and good news, we can load in any time we want.
Any
We can come
time.
In at 12, 1, 4. Yeah, and the bad news, it's on the second floor. And I said, what was the good news?
Well, the stairs are really wide.
News? Yeah, the stairs are really wide. What was that? What does that mean?
That was brutal.
So we get there, and of course we got a double park because it's a city. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Rick shouldn't bring the subwoofers, whatever.
Well, we went up and we looked at the room. The room was a pretty good sized room. There was a stage. But there were no acoustics. It's like just a big warehouse is what it was. So you made the decision, you know, or the suggestion, let's not bring the subs. And then what does Rick do? He carries the subs up all by himself.
He doesn't understand anything about room acoustics. A sub, a bass wave takes 12 feet to generate. And that bass wave... It's going to get caught up in all the corners because there was no curtains in there. There was nothing to deflect the sound. So it's just going to come and engulf the entire room with bass.
And make their balls rattle.
And you won't hear anything else except for...
Oh,
And I'm like, don't bring him up. Well, you know, we'll just bring him up just in case. Brought him up, and he's got the whole thing hooked through the crossover, which I said, no, we can't do that, man. I don't know how to work your crossover. I have no instructions. I don't know how to work it. He sets it up. We turn it on. It's fucked up. It's totally effed.
You know, that's the one thing I don't get. You know, I try to stay away from that because there's already too many chefs in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I don't understand that. And I think you made the suggestion later on that we should just draw a diagram and just stick to the fucking diagram. Because every time we play, you guys are dicking around with that thing for 30 minutes. Well, trying to get that working.
I think if I set it up, it'd be fine.
Initially.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, in Rick's defense.
It's not my stuff.
In Rick's defense, the root cause of one of the issues was one of the plugs.
Cord was bad.
Yeah, the cord was bad.
The one he should have thrown out, but he keeps going, no, we could. You just got to add a screw or solder it. Well, it never gets soldered or screwed, so he plugs it in every fucking gig. And it's always the one with the white wire hanging out of the banana clip. So... yeah, so I felt like we must have run up and down those stairs, and you did most of the carrying. And here's the thing. I'm downstairs, and I'm sucking wind. I'm like, whew. And Rick's like, yeah, and I'm getting this tightness in my chest. I'm like, quit fucking around, man. He goes, no, man, I've been having it lately, and I didn't tell the doctor. Why not? Well, because my insurance won't cover another surgery, And you know, because it's pre-existing,
but it will it will cover my death. Is that his reasoning?
I don't know. So he tells me, he starts going, so, you know, I just want to let you and Scott know, you know, that it's been really great playing with you guys. And
did he say which guitar I would get?
If this, no, he didn't. He didn't. I'll ask him. Which guitars do you bequeath to Scott and myself?
He fancies the Gibsons.
Yeah. So, you know, we're really hurting, and you're like nothing. You're putting shit up on your shoulders and running up and down the two flights like it's nothing.
It took a lot out of me. It was hotter than hell when we got to the second floor.
So, we started playing. Actually, we had trouble with the sound. We finally got it dialed in. I got the subwoofers working, and I knew right from the bat that it was going to be super ass loud. Because the problem is when you buy amp and you cut the speakers in half like that, it's really impossible to get a good balance in that size of a room. Now, if you stuck with the mid-range and the high-end and some higher bass tones, mm-hmm. It would be a nice, it wouldn't be real loud, but it would be nice and, what do you call it? Diffused. It would have a diffused sound to it. It wouldn't be so harsh or baseball busting. But the problem is when you cut them in half like that, that bass note, they're out of phase because the bass note's taking a while to hit you and then it's bouncing back. Whereas the high and mid range are bouncing all over the place. So that bass note is just filling the room. And by the time you're hitting the next two or three notes, the other one is still working its way around the room. You know what I'm saying?
I hear that. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I recommended we don't use the subs and we just go with the mains. But I told you I would lose that argument.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard to win the argument after Rick says he has chest pains and then carries the subs upstairs.
By himself.
What are you going to say? Well, no.
And it's all about security. You know, he's so nervous that there's no way those mains are going to handle everything we're doing. And I'm like, you got two giant speakers behind me that you can crank as loud as you want.
And there's only three of us.
Yeah.
It's not like we're an 18-piece band.
I can go without a mic in my kick because I play pretty loud. And Rick has the Savtech that he bought off you with its brand-new tubes and these big Rivera cabinets
That sounded nice.
It's just are loud as hell. So I don't know what the issue is.
I don't know. We'll have to talk to him about it. Sit him on a couch.
Even you, when we plugged you in, you're like, hey, man, I'm kind of loud. No, play. Let me hear you play. I'm like, yeah, that's perfect for me. I don't care what they think out there. I can hear it. No, you're like, that's loud. Don't worry. It'll be fine.
Yeah, so before we started playing, I walked over to the guy. His name is Eddie. He's the bouncer, I guess. So I said, hey, Eddie, man, what's up? So we were talking for a while, and he's doing this 20 years. He's seen more bands than he can remember. And I said, okay, after the first set, I'm going to come over to you, and I want you to give me a rating. I want you to rate the band. How do you rate bands? So he's telling me he gives thumbs down, thumbs sideways, and thumbs up, right? That's his rating.
Yeah.
You get the double thumbs up.
Yeah.
But to get the double thumbs up, you have to get the crowd into it. That's the only way you get the double thumbs up. So as we played the first set, I go over and talk to him, and he's giving us the sideways thumb to the thumbs up. We had another break shortly after. They wanted to make an announcement. I go back over. Hey, what's up? Thumbs up. And then by the end of the night, he's like, I'm giving you double thumbs up, even though this crowd is so goddamn lame. This is the lamest crowd I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of these shows. I've seen shows, not even when I was working, I've seen shows. I have never seen a crowd this lame in the history of bands playing
like,
in front of people.
Ba-bam! And all you could hear was, high five! There was nothing. And maybe once in a while.
There's what, maybe 150 people there?
Yeah. Thank you.
And somewhere between 150 and 200 people. Free booze, right?
Yeah.
But the crowd just... and then the whole time we're getting messages, too loud, turn it down. Interestingly, the two women that I did talk to, they were running the thing. They were running the charity. They're like, we don't want people to leave. We want them to stay here and spend money. There's a silent auction, a live auction, you know.
Right.
So we want to bring it down.
You picked the wrong band. You should have brought Rick Cicito.
Right after we brought it down, they left.
Yeah.
And I didn't see them the rest of the night. But I thought a great idea came out. Oh, the one thing that I noticed is you and Rick didn't leave the stage.
No.
At all.
No.
Whatsoever.
No.
So I went out.
What are we supposed to do?
I mingled with the crowd. I didn't know anybody in the crowd.
What were we supposed to do? I took a piss. I went and looked at the TV that they were auctioning off. I was thinking about doing it myself. And
That auctioner they had was the worst.
He wasn't bad.
He was horrible. He was horrible. Absolutely horrible. I've been to these things before, and the auctioneer has to generate excitement in people. For them to get excited about spending their money.
He didn't mention it was tax deductible once. No. I kept yelling, tax deductible.
Guy was horrible.
You bunch of tight-ass rich people.
He was this far away from the mic when he talked, and people were struggling to hear him.
Okay, folks. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I guess so.
So I'm mingling with the crowd. I'm asking him what they think. And some people were just like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever. And some people were very enthusiastic about what we were doing on stage. There was one table in particular that said that they really enjoyed the band being there. At that table was the mayor's wife was at that table.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the table that, and here's the great idea. Here's where the great idea comes in. You and Rick authorized me to buy shots for that table.
Right.
So I bought shots. There was 4 lemon drops and 2 buttery nipples.
Nice.
But I think that's a great idea that we need to, in the next gig, like before we even start playing, just kind of make an announcement that at some point during the evening,
a lucky member of the crowd will get a shot.
Right. A group of people. You and Rick are going to authorize me to purchase shots for a group of people or a table of people.
Yeah.
That could be stiff. But I think it's well worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think better it's the like a raffle. or something. Put your name in a hat, and the band will buy you a shot. And we'll have to make up a shot.
All right.
An AKC shot. Well, let's think about that. Shot.
Let's think about that offline. You
a
know
shot
what I'm saying,
that's
John?
So obnoxious that you drink one and you're you
done.
Need a cab.
You're done.
Cab ride home.
Yeah, you're done.
They'll kill you. you're done. Do it. Do it. I let them go.
Yeah. So then
I dropped him off.
One of the nice things is we got finished at 11. I don't know what time we broke down and we're all loaded up, but we had some time to spend downstairs where we had a couple of drinks and just shot the shit.
Yeah.
And then went
It was
home.
Quite nice.
Yes.
It was a nice wind down, I thought.
Yes.
I like that.
Very nice wind down.
You know
very
what I,
nice.
You know what I did, though, while I was sitting there with my kit? Did I show you? I was fucking with that guy that parked behind me.
No,
on
no.
On the street.
Uh-uh.
He's out there with his wife, and I kept making my panic alarm go off on my car.
All right, you did show me that.
He's looking around.
So we're up on the second floor, and John's car is parked right out front, and he's fucking with people walking by his car.
Beep, beep, beep. And they're, what the fuck? And then I shut it off. I'd look around.
Yeah.
Make it go again.
Yeah. Well, I talked to Kelly. She's the one who put the whole thing together, and I talked to her today.
Yeah.
And I said, so how did everything go? Did you meet your expectations? And she said they made about $10,000 to $11,000 for the charity after expenses.
Yeah.
And that her goal was $10,000. So,
oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Alternative music.
Alternative music. Yeah.
Now, while we were... while we were playing,
yeah.
Well, actually, before we started playing, I think the Cubs lost their second game, right?
Do we have to relive this,
and
man?
And then, yeah. Well, it's a century and counting, John, for
no,
the Chicago Cubs.
The Cubs didn't play that day.
Was it the Sox?
They played on Thursday, the Sox.
So the Sox were playing, and they were their Sox are down 0-2,
yeah.
Right? They played.
No, they're 2-1.
Oh, they won.
Today, yeah. They won at home.
Boy, this town or the Tribune is owns the Cubs, right?
Yeah,
yeah. You gotta go to the page 38 to read anything about the Sox.
Well, they just won today.
I know, but what time did they win?
I don't know, 3, 4.
Yeah, I hit the website after 4, and there's no mention of the Sox winning whatsoever.
Yeah, they won.
Century and counting for the Cubs. Manny Ramirez and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Shoved Chicago into another long winner Saturday night, completing a 3-game sweep of their first round playoff series with a 3-1 victory.
Can you believe that shit?
And the Cubs had like the best. Did they have the best record in baseball?
In the National League.
And then boom, 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 they're out.
Yeah.
3 games. Done. Done. Put a fork in it.
That's fucking. you know, Lee was in a slump, and then he hits 540 in the playoffs. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But Soriano, who's supposed to be Mr. Slugger,
Mr. October,
he does .047.
Oh, that's brutal. He's the leadoff guy,
he hits
right?
47.
.047.
Yeah. Fucking douchebag. They told him, don't swing at the first pitch. We've not seen these pitchers ever. So we don't know what they're throwing. We don't know any. There's, you know, we got nothing on them. Don't swing at the first pitch. Let some pitches go by. Learn the pitcher's style. You know, let the count get up there. You're a good hitter. Then swing. Every fucking time up, Soriano swings at the first pitch. Struck out almost every time.
A dope.
He's
dope.
A douchebag.
Douche. Hey, John, there's always next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck it. I told the wife I might become a Sox fan.
I remember.
She's like, I won't go that far.
In 1974, the Cubs were out of it. And then the slogan for that year was, keep it alive in 75. But you can go back 100 years, and there's nothing going on with the Cubs. Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's brutal.
That just goes to show you, man, the postseason. The Sox were sucking it up, sucking ass, and they were down. They were like 2-3 games ahead. Then they were a half a game out and they came back and won to get
two games they had to win.
Yeah.
And now they're in the same position.
Yeah.
They have to win the next two games.
Well, yeah, but at least they got two games, the next two games to win.
Right.
The Cubs had to win all three, and they didn't even win one of them.
The Chicago Cubs. And then,
suck
it's, you know, it's too bad because I thought Eddie Vedder came out with a nice song. Was it this year he came out with that song about the Cubs?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and not going to be playing that one for a while because they're going to blow next year.
Bears won. That's all I know.
Bears won. They're 3-2, John. 3-2 to Bears.
3-2, and they won like 34-7 today.
You know, and moving Kyle on Orton. To other big news over the week, unless you want to talk about the Bears.
No.
A credit cut.
This really cracked me up. So the last time we podcast, the bailout was not going through.
$4 a gallon for gasoline.
The bailout was not happening.
Yeah.
But they went to the Senate. They monkeyed around with it. The Senate passed it. It went back to the House. The House passed it. It went to the W. Did the W ever sign it?
Yeah.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah, it's now a law.
So now it's just so goddamn revolting and nauseous and repulsive to me. And then I read this, John. I read this about our current president, the W. Are you ready for this?
I'll try.
The W thinks. Well, I have a problem with that right there. The W doesn't think. But it says the W thinks that we'll get back much, if not all, of the $700 billion.
Oh, my God.
Where have you heard that before, John? Have you heard that before from the W? I have. Yeah. You know this war in Iraq?
Yeah.
The oil.
We'll be accepted as liberators.
We'll be accepted as liberators. And the oil.
Yeah.
We'll make more money on the oil, and it'll pay for the war, and then we'll profit from that. Anybody who still buys into the W is a goddamn dope. You know, I also read he's got the lowest ratings ever of anybody, ever since they've been keeping ratings.
Yeah.
And I still wonder, who the fuck are those 27%? Are there, is 27% of the population mental? Are they like below a 90 on an IQ test? What is going on?
I don't know. It's brutal. I got a sound clip. I think you sent it to me about him getting hammered.
Who?
The W.
He's
hammered in the media. Here he is.
It's about time.
Our economy is depending on decisive action from the government. The sooner we address the problem, the sooner we can get back on the path of growth and job creation. This is what elected leaders owe the American people, and I'm confident we'll deliver. Thank you.
That's the President of the United States. Let's bring in our panel, John Heilman. Will that comfort the markets this morning?
I don't think that comforts anybody.
I'm not comforted.
I don't think that comforts the markets, and I don't think that moves a single vote. I mean, I say this with due respect and even with some sympathy for the man. That, to me, was the picture of a beaten dog. I mean, that was a picture of presidential impotence right there. I thought he looked terrible, like his bell had been rung. He looked drawn to me and like a beaten figure. That was not a picture of either strength or reassurance. Does anybody disagree with that?
Peggy,
I don't.
This president does not have a good poker face. I'm being very serious here.
Yes.
You need a poker face. You know what? When cities are in flames, that's when a president talks about the greatness of America and how bright our future is. But this is a president that did not hide his shock on 9/11, the early hours after the attacks, and it didn't look like he was hiding it very well there, did it?
This guy, his whole persona is based on confidence.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have any of it now.
It's over.
The guy's right. He's beaten like a goddamn dog, like somebody beat him like a dog with a whip.
Yeah.
He's just waiting for the day he can leave the White House and go to his ranch and then write his memoirs. Like anybody's going to read that shit. What an ass.
It's brutal, man. I mean, and then,
about it from his perspective. He thinks he's doing God's work, right? So the war in Iraq, it doesn't go the way he thinks it's going to go. And he doesn't. when I say think, I need to take that back. He doesn't think, because he even said from his gut. His gut is what talks to him, and God in his gut. That's what the last 8 years have been run on. Look at the shit we're into now. So I'm starting, because of the lack of confidence, I am going to stick up for the W. The W at least is starting to be able to observe his own misfortunes, his own stupidity, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
it's sinking in that he's a fucking failure. I don't know, running oil companies into the ground, you think that would have sunk in. But no.
No.
He was doing coke then, you know? So, hey, everything's great. Everything's a party. But he's taken the entire America, United States of America.
Nice stace.
Down the toilet, John. And it's starting to sink in, and he's a beaten dog.
Well,
he's got no confidence.
To be fair to the W, this didn't happen overnight. This whole credit thing happened 20 years ago.
It didn't happen overnight.
It started 20
years
ago.
But he's not intellectual enough to even observe that it would be a problem. So he's going along thinking, the only problem I have to deal with is Iraq and maybe health care. And I'll put this bogus thing about Social Security.
And you know what?
And then this hits him in the face.
In his defense, strategically, maybe he knew from the get-go that we're going to be in this fucking brutal ass situation.
No way.
Where? Well, hear me out. All right.
All right.
You're probably right, but let's say for one moment,
let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and he thought, "Man, we're really fucked. This whole credit bubble. What is it called?
Spit it out, man.
Whatever it is, this whole thing is going to come down. The economy is going to get all fucked up. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over to Iraq. We got to get an excuse somehow." Boom, we get one. Great. 9/11. We're going to
attack
Iraq.
Giving him way too much credit.
Hold on a second,
okay,
man.
Okay, go ahead.
We're going to attack Iraq. We're going to take over one of the main natural resources. They have a ton of oil. We're going to take it over, and now we're going to control this oil so that if the economy does get rocky, we have some play in this game because we control one of these resources of energy. But as we found out, it's not working out that way, because the deals that the government in Iraq was going to do with the U.S. from all of this, because you can't just take them over and colonize them like the British used to do. You have to be more diplomatic than that.
Or more violent.
Or more violent. But then the government that's starting to become established over there is saying, well, no, we're not going to work contracts with Exxon or anybody else. We're going to work contracts with Russia and China and all their oil companies. Fuck the U.S. So now we're fucked. We're out on an island. The world hates us. We got this credit crisis looming. Everything's fucked. And even Cheney said deficits don't mean anything, but yet the guy is putting all of his money in tax-sheltered, which is a good thing, but tax-sheltered bonds and municipal bonds, whatever the hell they're called. Not only is he doing that, but he's dumping money into European funds and what do they call those? Inflation-protected bonds, financial investments.
That he even has money sickens me. He should be in jail, if you ask me, and so should the W. They're two ignoramuses. Well, Cheney's a little brighter than the W. But I don't buy your argument or your hypothesis at all.
Anyway,
because
what I'm saying is Cheney knew, so he knew the dollar was going to inflate a lot. So he's been socking at least $25 million away in short-term municipal bonds that are tax-exempt, and they hold up against the interest rates rise with inflation. So they're protected against inflation. So he knew it was coming, plus he put money in the European market, which is what they say in our last podcast is going to happen with the $700 billion. or any of the money that they've these fuckers are running away with.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, getting back to the W thing, maybe Cheney came up with that idea and influenced the W, but I don't buy it from a W perspective because the idea is too layered. W doesn't go multi-layered. He doesn't get in depth with ideas. It's gut check time for W.
He's not a multitasker.
Right. That's right, John. I don't know if it was a Coker or what.
I know there's a saying in Texas, maybe Texas, Tennessee. I'm not sure.
But you're giving him way too much credit.
Yeah.
To the W. Dope. Dope. Worst president. Worst human being in the history of the world, the W. I don't know how this, and what does it say about our country that he was elected not once, John?
I don't know.
But twice. Elected twice. Well, some would say that he stole the second election. Stole.
Stole it.
With the electronic voting and all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And the Karl Rove dirty politics.
Diebold sold to a private company because they were like, yeah, this is fucked up. Our shit's going to, somebody's going to find us out eventually because you can hack into our stuff so easily. They sold their company off. So, yeah.
Here's the thing. You know, there's all these conspiracy, not conspiracy, but there's, like, I certainly have opinions about the $700 billion, and it's going to pay off these executives at Goldman Sachs and all this shit. There's not one of these motherfuckers, not one of them is patriotic. And it would come out and say, this is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on the receiving end of this, but this is wrong. This is not what America's about. Not one of these fuckers.
You know, they should all be hung up crucifixion style and put to death by cigarette burns on Wall Street.
Yes.
Here I stumbled upon a website called the Corbett Report.
Corbett, not the Colbert.
No, yeah.
The Corbett.
CorbettReport.com. CORBETT. They do like a podcast. The guy does some videos, YouTube. And
really? A podcast?
Interviews.
Like once a week? Or does he go up north once a week and then he
interviews
has to have somebody?
People. It's like the same, like that, it's called like Intelligent News Media or something. It's an independent news outlet. It's the same as what we were listening to last week when that
Real
Economist
Network
was on. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
This is a four-parter because it's real long. I'll play one part. We could talk about it.
When the media announced the Paulson Bernanke plan to bail out Wall Street by giving the Treasury $700 billion and carte blanche to do whatever they want with it, people got angry.
You're talking about a bailout for like some of the wealthiest banks in the world, but yet we can't seem to help our own citizens who are having foreclosure crises.
But if people are upset over this proposed $700 billion plan, why are they not equally upset by the $188 billion per day that was actually created by the Federal Reserve last week alone to help prop up the failing investment banks? Or the $630 billion the Fed pledged to inject into the system as soon as the bailout was rejected? The fact is that in the last week alone, more than $1.5 trillion have been made available in sweetheart loans to Wall Street by the Federal Reserve, America's central bank.
Now, the 630 he's talking about is something that Bush, if the bailout wasn't passed, was just going to make available, just with a stroke of a pen. That's how he could just stamp it, done. Done.
You know, and
I had no idea, but the Federal Reserve is actually a private corporation, even though the board, the governing board, is appointed at the president's pleasure, at the pleasure of the president. It's made up of private banks.
Yes, and you know, in the history of our podcast, we've always gone after the W because he's an easy target,
right?
But really, you got to start including Congress in this thing.
Oh, yeah.
For 2 years, it's been a Democratic Congress and nothing. Pelosi had an opportunity to
impeach.
Pelosi's
the biggest piece of shit.
Pelosi's a cock sucker, John. Yeah. And so it's Congress, it's Democrats,
well, she probably
and Republicans.
Is. She's married.
It's at the highest levels of our political system is all corrupt. All of it. Nothing is honest. Nothing has integrity. It's all corrupt.
Nothing.
Jefferson, Franklin, when they wrote when they founded this country, they said they were prepared for a revolution to occur every 20 years.
Yeah.
I read a great quote somewhere, and I'm going to paraphrase because I probably won't be able to remember it. But they said, this country was created by geniuses so that it would be idiot-proof.
Yeah.
And it's failed after how many years? 230, 240 years? It has failed because nobody could account for the W in charge and these...
They didn't set the bar low enough.
They didn't set the bar low enough. And the rest of the Senate and Congress and the corruption that's just rampant. Not one person in there that I've heard of.
Well, I got a little piece on Pelosi.
Well, you got a Ron Paul. He'll speak about it, about the corruption.
That's what
you got
I like about Ron
Paul. Feingold.
I mean, he's a piece of shit, too, but and I guess they all are. But I like how he comes out and he and in this next part of this Corbett report, Ron Paul has something to say to Bernanke and to put in perspective what it means, what this bailout means as far as what inflation actually, what it really is.
Well, hold on. In the first clip, he asked the question, why isn't anybody talking about this? The $188 billion a day and the $630 billion. Because the media is not reporting it. I didn't hear about that in the mainstream media. Did you?
He gets to that. Here's part two.
The name Federal Reserve conjures a reassuring image of a federally operated bank lending out its physical reserves. But there are just two problems with that perception.
Oh, absolutely. The Federal Reserve is neither federal and has doubtful reserves.
What is little understood, even by Congress, is that when the Fed makes these loans, it is not lending out actual money from its physical reserves. It is, in fact, using its bank charter to create money out of thin air. The problem with this system is that when money is created out of nothing, it increases the money supply without any corresponding increase in the economy. More paper chasing the same amount of goods means each dollar is worth less. This is inflation. The effect is the exact same as if the Federal Reserve went into your bank account and took a percentage of your savings. Ron Paul explains.
But I maintain really that inflation is a tax, and if the Federal Reserve and you as chairman have this authority to increase the money supply arbitrarily, you're probably the biggest taxer in the country. You're a bigger taxer than to Congress. Because, you know, they're talking now about a bailout package of $300 billion, and we'll have to raise the national debt to accommodate to take care of the housing crisis. But you as a Federal Reserve Chairman and the Federal Reserve Board and the system create hundreds of billions of dollars without even appropriation process.
Congressman, I couldn't agree with you more that inflation is a tax.
In other words, when the Federal Reserve injects this money onto Wall Street to prop up the investment banks, they are taxing you to bail out the bankers.
Yeah. Did you hear Bernanke?
I did.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And right.
What it just amazes me, and this is one of the things that Ron Paul touches on, is that without appropriations, without any oversight, without any law being passed, they're just sending the money out, no matter what. They're making it out of thin air. And the $700,000, I wish it was that, $700 billion, that whole package is just like a feel-good. It's something. It's like a diversion because they were going to throw that money in there anyway because they're just making it. They're just printing it.
Yeah, and, you know, when I saw the hearings with Bernanke and Paulson, Paulson's from Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
Guess who's the biggest beneficiary of this whole bailout?
Oh, Goldman.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs.
Knows. Yeah.
So during the questioning, Paulson, Mr. Evasive, you can tell he's not being honest. Bernanke at least was being honest. If he was directly questioned, he would be honest.
Yeah.
He wouldn't give you the answer, but you had to directly ask him, which I think is a little shitty, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody needs to give these guys a patriotism pep talk.
Yeah.
Before they step up there. because this Paulson was Mr. Evasive, because he's just pocketing the money and sending it to his friends, and it's a goddamn joke, John. It's a joke.
And this is why I think Andrew, one of our listeners from the UK, is going off about Barack Obama, because he wants to know, how's he going to fix this mess when, and all this doublespeak that's going on about the economy and all that, how's he going to fix it without it affecting taxpayers? How's he going to put in a health care plan without this being a factor? And at some point, you know, I mean, he's right, but I don't think Barack Obama expected this big crisis to happen.
FUBAR, John.
You know, yeah, this whole fucked up beyond recognition situation to happen when he was campaigning, and all of a sudden here it is. So I think realistically he might say, well, you know, we're going to have to put that health care on hold because people are going to lose their jobs and their homes and their savings and their pensions, and a dollar is going to be worth jack shit. So we got to, as the words of Palin, shore up our economy. And it's all about job creation, health care.
Right.
But, you know, I see Andrew's point. We should probably get him on the show because he is a financial guru.
Well, you know, Barack, for me, with the FISA, the vote for FISA, and then the vote for the bailout, I'm not happy with Barack at all. I am less happy with McCain. Not only that, but the guy's going to kick off and Sarah Palin's going to be the president if McCain were to get into office, which frightens me beyond belief because she's one of these Armageddon idiots. So my vote is still going to go for Barack. And if you think about his presidency, if he were to become president, the greater the risk, the greater the reward, John. So he really has an opportunity, historically, to be one of the best presidents in the history of the United States if he can figure out how to turn this fucked up
mess around. And he's kind of a regular guy. You know, he went from kind of shitty family life. I identify with him a little bit because I never had a dad that was around, you know, and he didn't either. And he kind of like sucked it up and had some grandparents. He lived with his grandparents. I lived with my grandmother most of the time. And he got his shit together. Does that automatically make him deserving of president of the United States? I probably not. But when I look at McCain and I see a guy who, when he's asked, have you ever been without health care? And he says no, but he references the one time he was without it. Guess when?
POW, John.
When he didn't have a kitchen
table.
But he's never been without health care. He was born into a family of
his dad was an admiral. Yeah, his grandfather was an admiral.
Military background. You know,
what was he, a fighter pilot?
When he was a young punk, he had a fucking kick-ass Corvette. Makes me kind of envious. You know, he's got 12, 13 houses. You know, he married like a beauty queen, and because she got in an accident and
dumped
looked all
her.
Fucked up, he dumped her. Married somebody, a very rich woman who is heir to the Budweiser fortune, you know.
We'll get to McCain's character later in an essay I found.
I mean, this whole thing about this guy, He just thinks he deserves it because he fought in Vietnam and crashed four planes and one almost killed him.
It's not that for me. For me, it's Obama. He comes from I don't know where he comes from, but he's a self-made man. He didn't have an admiral for a dad. He didn't have George Sr. for a dad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The guy could have done anything he wanted. He graduated with a Juris Doctor. With honors. I mean, he was the first elected president of the Harvard Review, first black president of the Harvard Review. He's smart.
He's smart.
He went to the University of Chicago, which is the home of economics. Unfortunately, I'm not too happy about the Milton Friedman theory, the free market economics, because I think it's a myth. But he has some background there. I mean, he's from that school, Harvard, I forget what other, Columbia, was it Columbia College he went to? So he's got some accolades. He's got some education.
But when you, not only that, when you watch the debates and he says, hey, I agree with John McCain on that. And he talks, he's honest, and he appears to be honest.
Appears to be honest.
He looks at McCain. McCain won't look at him. McCain then turns his words into, hey, I agree with him, into an ad.
Yeah.
I mean, McCain's, he flip-flops.
He's disingenuous.
McCain's opinion, whatever his current opinion is based on what his contributors want him to say and what the polls say. That's what his latest opinion is. The guy flip-flops more than anybody I know because for him, the goal of, and this is just my opinion, the goal of presidency, he'll do whatever it takes to become president.
Whatever
it takes. Where you get a sense from Barack Obama that he's in this campaign to become president, but it's not a do whatever it takes if I'm going to sell out my own integrity.
Yeah.
To become president. He won't cross that line, which is appealing to me. So, and again, the stage is set. First of all, McCain is never going to do it. He's never going to become the greatest president in the United States. The guy's a fucking asshole, and he's stupid. Obama has an opportunity. I don't know much about him. I don't like that he voted for FISA. I don't like that he voted for the bailout.
Either.
But he has an opportunity to become one of the greatest presidents in the U.S. history if he can turn this fuck around.
I think Jefferson is one of the greatest presidents of all time. You say Lincoln, and I like Lincoln, too. I got a book that Rick gave me, which I haven't read yet. But Jefferson still had slaves. I mean, here's a guy who preached freedom and all this stuff and helped draft the Constitution and Declaration of Independence and all that, but he still had slaves. He still found some way to justify that, which I never thought was possible. You know, I mean, just it seems stupid to me, but
that's because we didn't have a time machine and go back and talk. Hey, we do have a time machine. What am I talking about?
The point I'm trying to make is that there's no way we're going to agree. You and I don't even agree on everything. You know what I'm saying?
I think I know
what
you're
saying. So we're not going to agree with everything Obama does. And we're not inside on all that stuff. And a lot of it is politics, too. It's like, okay, I'll do this. Like, you saw this bill. To get some people to vote yes on it. What's with the fucking Puerto Rican rum thing? What's that all about? Giving X million dollars for Puerto Rican rum production?
Yeah, it's all a bunch of shit. You know, I would vote for it, but I need this before I'm going to vote for it. The other thing, I saw a devastating video today that showed the contributions of these politicians before the bailout vote that was rejected. And then after the bailout vote, and the amount of money that specifically Goldman Sachs injected into the campaigns of these politicians that changed their vote is just disgusting.
Right, and there's a list of 25, and of those 25, there's like 57% were Democrats.
Yeah, and some of them, they can be bought off. Here's what disgusts me the most. They can be bought off for $14,000. They can be bought off for that.
Yeah.
They can sell out America for $14,000 fucking dollars. That pisses me off. And there's a website.
They
I don't know
need
what it
to
is.
Be fucked in the ass with
but,
a cactus.
Hey, we have elections coming up, and we can do everything we can to vote all these assholes out. All
I
of
say,
them.
People, educate yourself, man. Come on, don't vote one party. That's what cracks me up. Some people are, oh no, I'm a party loyalist. I'm not. I lean left, but I'm not a party loyalist. I voted for fucking, what was that knucklehead who was against Perot? I voted for that guy when he was up against Clinton.
I
thought the nuttier the better. Ross Perot.
Well, it's ridiculous because let's say Hitler came back to life and was running in the Republican ticket. Would you vote for Hitler?
Who, me?
Just because he was a Republican?
Yeah, they would. That's
they would.
What I'm
that's
saying.
Ridiculous.
They walk in and they hit straight ticket Republican, and that's it. They don't care. It's Republican. I'm a Republican. Bam. You know, you got to vote on the issues.
Right on, John.
Or don't vote.
Stay home.
Okay, here's part three.
Okay.
And if people are upset about this $700 billion proposed bailout, why aren't they upset about the $2.3 trillion that the Pentagon blithely admits has gone missing from their coffers?
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
$2.3 trillion with a T. That's $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. To understand how the Pentagon can lose track of trillions, consider the case of one military accountant who tried to find out what happened to a mere $300 million.
We know it's gone. But we don't know what they spent it on.
Oh, and the date of that announcement? September 10th, 2001. And one of the offices destroyed in the attack on the Pentagon the very next day? The budget analyst office.
That plane had come directly under our section of the offices, the Army Budget Office, where 38 Army employees were killed, was directly beneath us.
But surely we can trust that this $2.3 trillion is insignificant. And that Rumsfeld was justified in brushing off questions from Congress about the matter.
Fiscal year 1999, $2.3 trillion missing. Fiscal year 2000, $1.1 trillion missing. And DOD is the number one reason why the government can't balance its checkbook.
I've forgotten what the second question was.
I think Ms. Jonas knows it.
Okay.
Can you believe that?
I can't believe that. Well, actually, I can.
Unbelievable.
How do you, $2.3 trillion, how does that go missing?
$2.3 trillion. Now, I don't know if we've talked about this conspiracy theory about there wasn't a plane that hit the Pentagon. And maybe there wasn't a plane. I don't know. Even Special Ed has some theories about that, which... he says that a relative of his, I'm not going to say, I don't know if we talked about somebody he knows that works for the Pentagon, is starting to lean towards the conspiracy theory.
Well, I'm leaning totally against it. You know why?
No.
Because Don Rumsfeld made this announcement on September 11th.
10th.
If he knew about September 11th, he wouldn't have said a goddamn thing. He would have had this thing crash into the Pentagon and burn all the records, and that would have been it. Nobody would have known about the $2.3 trillion missing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what this guy's how he's trying to frame this argument, but you know, because he's got other conspiracy shit going on his website, that I think he's trying to tie the fact that you know they're going to find out about this stuff, and I think he has done a lot of tying the government to the September 11th attack, saying that they knew about it, they knew it was going to happen, they knew what data was going to happen, they knew to tell the interceptors to stand down and not shoot down these planes, and they kind of let it happen knowing it was going to happen. Why that's any significance to Rumsfeld telling everybody that we lost $2.3 trillion and we don't know where it is, I don't know.
Here's what I want to know. If
maybe that's who they maybe they paid some people off with that. I don't know.
Maybe, but if you're the W, well, now I'm thinking more conspiracy, because if you're the W, if you're anybody, let's say you're the manager of Kentucky Fried Chicken, right? And your employee comes to you and he says we lost $2.3 trillion. Would he still have a job the next day? No.
No.
You would have people go after him to find out where this went, yeah. And he'd be in prison. But Rumsfeld makes the statement, and he has a job for the next, what, 5-6 years? He's the guy who's in charge of the Iraq invasion?
Yeah.
That's a goddamn joke.
You don't go in with the army you want. You go in with the army you have. What? All right, part four here is the scariest part, in my opinion, of this whole
Halloween's
video.
Coming up. So
yeah, this is pretty spooky what he discusses here.
But if people aren't concerned about the hidden Federal Reserve inflation tax or the trillions missing from the Pentagon, perhaps this number will give them pause for thought. 1 quadrillion. That's the amount held globally in derivatives. Exotic financial instruments that exploded in popularity in recent years. Derivatives are essentially financial fictions. Imaginary wealth created by leveraging out real assets hundreds of times. This means that a small amount of assets can represent mind-boggling amounts of money on the balance books of most major investment banks. Now, the meltdown in mortgage-backed securities is threatening to start a chain reaction, burning its way through this derivative bubble and creating a financial black hole. To put this in perspective, the combined value of all the assets on Earth is estimated to be $100 trillion. That means the entire Earth could be swallowed 10 times over by this financial black hole. So if we're upset over the $700 billion plan, why aren't we concerned about the trillions plundered by the Fed, the trillions missing from the Pentagon, or the quadrillion-dollar derivative bubble? Could it be because the controlled corporate media is trying to distract us from the real issues by telling us we've already won the fight?
The bill would pass. Well, they knew, and everyone was very careful and very diligent to say that they knew this was going to be a tough vote. It's a tough vote to vote for because you're talking about potential price tag of $700 billion, no matter what party you stand with.
Smokescreen, Scott.
Smokescreen.
And I'll tell you, I worked with this German guy, and I think almost every company I've ever worked for is carried some level of inventory, let's say, okay? And there's 25 different types of widgets in this inventory, and all the widgets were bought at a certain value, let's say $1 a piece. But somebody decides that the price to make these widgets has gone up. So they've increased the price of the widget, which also increases the value of the inventory. Which instead of $1, each one is worth $1.50 now. But it was originally purchased at $1. And then on top of it, then you add your list price.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same. I don't know if it's the same, but in my... when I hear this guy talk about this, he's talking about when they leverage this financial or dollar or whatever. We were talking earlier about the compound interest on top of compound, and using all these compounded interests as collateral for more loans, for this, for that, and the other thing. And it just... there's no real value. The real value is gone. It's completely inflated into this derivative.
It's a fairy tale.
And it seems to me, I don't know for sure, I can't say, but I think all corporations do this with their inventory. And I've argued with auditors before where I said, hey, what's up with that? That's the way it's on the books that way. So the whole Sarbanes-Oxley, all that crap, that's a bunch of shit. We got to follow a bunch of rules, but stuff like this where an inventory could be inflated when it really isn't that value anymore. Just because it costs more to make that part, your existing inventory automatically gets to go up too, which doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't make sense to me, and here's what pisses me off. Here's what really pisses me off. This tax assessment on our property.
Yeah.
What do they call that?
Survey? I don't
property
know.
Tax.
Property taxes, yeah. Assessment. Yeah, you got assessments.
So, I don't know, when they did the assessments last year.
Yeah.
So, they assessed the value of our homes at an inflated value.
Right.
Because the market said,
right,
this is what the value is. And it's really not that value. But we're paying taxes at that value when it really should be like assessed at least 25% less. Because right, they were basing it on this real estate bubble, this market that just crashed.
Yeah.
Do you think our taxes are going to be reassessed and come down?
They can. You could go in there with a bunch of people from your neighborhood and tell them to get their fucking shit together and reduce those taxes because it's unrealistic to expect us to pay these taxes based on an inflated price because of a bubble.
That's what I'm going to do.
And now it's deflated.
I'm going to do
that.
And
if you don't fucking do it, I'm going to take all these people that just came in here with me, and we're going to vote your ass out of office. And we're going to find somebody who's competent that can do this fucking job.
Nice.
And it's time that us Americans take this country back over.
I like that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that.
No doubt.
No doubt. And here's the, you know, they talk about this this crisis we're in. It's based on these subprime mortgages and blah, blah, blah. And people are trying to blame the Democrats. They're trying to blame the Republicans and all this shit. They're all in it together. It's all their fault.
Oh, yeah.
Our government fucked us. That's the bottom line. But you know who else doesn't get any blame that should get blame?
Who's that?
Realtors.
Yeah.
Fucking realtors, man. They're the ones who said, hey, we got these cheap loans. We got this. We got that. They're the ones that would...
Well, no, it's mortgage brokers.
Realtors and mortgage
brokers.
Well, the
brokers. Realtors are like, well, oh, you don't have good credit? Well, I got this guy.
Well, it's not only that. They're
Frank
the
Johnson.
Ones jacking up the price of the house.
Yeah.
They're the ones. A conflict of interest. So, for example, let's say, and I bought
well,
many
that's
houses.
Not, that's not true.
It is true.
No,
it,
because,
no, I'm going to
no.
tell you.
Okay, go
anecdotal.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, anecdotal.
All right.
All right. So we looked at a house in Des Plaines, right?
Yeah.
It was at a certain price.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's worth this much. Oh, no, I think it is. I think it is. What do you mean you think it is? He thinks it is because he's going to get a commission on that price. If we lower the price, his commission is going to be lowered. Actually, I think it's more than that. Yeah, well, I don't. So we had the inspector come in. The inspector checked the house out. The inspector's like, it's cinder block foundation in the basement.
Yeah,
you're going to flood. There's no way you cannot flood.
Not unless you do it like me, man.
This basement's going to flood.
Water? Did I get any water?
With 2 inches of rain. So we talked to the, hey, our inspector says that cinder block. We're not interested. Oh, let's not rush. Let's not get hasty now. What do you mean, let's not get hasty? The guy representing us said, oh, no, I think it's worth more
right,
than
because
this.
Because he gets a bigger commission.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a conflict of interest in the whole real estate
yeah.
industry.
Right.
And all these assholes should be fired. I don't know why people still go to realtors. All the stuff is
yeah.
on the web. Just get a goddamn
right.
broadband connection.
Yeah.
You're
going
to save more money than spending yeah. 6% of a sale on a realtor.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there's actually, I'm going to say, when we bought our house, I paid $250 for it. All right.
Mm-hmm.
About 2 years later, a house, two houses from me. It's a ranch with an addition. They paid $419. They just put
in
it on
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years after. So that was about 7 years ago, or it was 5 years ago for them. They have just now listed their house just this last week for $529.9.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there's no way. And guess where they're moving? They're moving by you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How could they afford that?
I have
We're
no
going to
idea.
Have to move back here. Maybe we could swap houses with them.
No, it's not as nearly as nice as your house. But anyway, yeah. I mean, I know what you're saying, but when the here's how... What's great about the bank at that point is when you're going for the loan, they come in and they check out all the houses in the neighborhood and they see what they went for and they determine what the real value is, so to speak, unless they're in cahoots too, you never know. But they determine the real value, which is eventually lower than what that realtor is trying to BS you with. And I remember, yeah, you're right. I was selling my house, and this chick came in and with this low ball figure, and I said, no fucking way. They got to pay this amount or don't take it. And my realtor was like, wait, you know, just, you know, be cool. Why are you getting so hasty? I go, I'm getting calls every day on my house, and it was just listed. I said, do you really think that I can't get the money I'm asking if I'm getting calls almost every day, 2-3 calls a day? I said, you tell her that I'm not fixing shit in this house and she pays what I put on the market for, or forget it. You know what? We got the money.
You got what you wanted. But no, the realtor, he wants a transaction to happen.
Yeah.
He doesn't want any shit to go on. Just make it happen so I get my commission check.
Let's get it over with.
For doing nothing.
And I flipped out at my wife because I said, what do we need a realtor for? She's like, you know, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to blah, blah, blah. Our realtor didn't even show up to the closing.
No, that would piss me off. I would ask for the check, say, hey, let me give the check to the realtor. Can you cut it? And I'd just rip it up right in front of him.
The great thing about buying this house, it was a FSBO.
FSBO.
For sale by owner.
Nice.
And it was told, it was the person who hooked us up with somebody that just happened to be driving by and said, hey, check it out. And we went and checked it out. And, the realtor showed us about 20, 30 houses that I said, fuck this. If you take me to another one of these fucking dumps, I swear to God, I'm going to blackball you for the rest of your life. Take me to a real fucking house that I don't have to paint or put new siding on for this amount of money. Do your goddamn job.
Right.
And then we ended up with a house that a neighbor told us about.
Yeah. That's how it happens.
It's a bunch of shit, Scott.
It's who you know.
All right, let's get on to some funny stuff.
Funny stuff? That wasn't funny?
Well, I got a funny... Palin, there's a couple things that came out. Palin and Biden had a debate.
Oh, right, the debate.
We forgot all about that, didn't we?
Yeah, before the debate, do you have any clips of the gotcha media?
I don't have it.
McCain and Palin, they're claiming that... some of the questions surprised Palin, and that's called gotcha media.
Well, it was a question that was asked of her about Pakistan.
Yeah, whatever. You should be prepared to answer any question. If you don't know, you say, I don't know.
Yeah.
How hard is that?
And they said it was gotcha media, and Katie Couric said, how can it be gotcha media if some people who are walking by her just ask her the question, and she answers? And McCain's like, well, you answer. I played it. I played.
Oh,
this.
Did we play that already?
I didn't play the gotcha clip, but I played the actual clip that she, she was asked the question on Stephanopoulos, and he was asked the question. McCain was asked the question on Stephanopoulos, and but she was asked out in front of a sandwich shop or something. What would you do with Pakistan? And she basically said exactly the same thing Barack Obama did. Just go in and we're going to blow them all up if they don't turn over the terrorists. And McCain, you know, slammed Obama for saying that. You don't say that. And then Obama came back and said, well, you sing songs about blowing up countries. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And then Katie Couric asked that question of Palin. And McCain jumped in like grandpa. Hey, don't mess with my granddaughter. Leave her alone. This is gotcha journalism. And Katie Couric is like, how could it be gotcha journalism when a journalist didn't even ask the fucking question?
Well, and the other thing is, from their perspective, it is gotcha journalism because the way the W regime has worked is they've planted reporters, they've planted the questions ahead of time. And if you didn't ask the questions that they want you to ask, you weren't invited anymore. So that is the context or the framework that McCain's talking about. That's why it's gotcha journalism, because he wasn't in control.
All right, well, let's get to...
douche.
I got a couple McCain clips. I got a couple of Palin clips, and I have some Saturday Night Live clips with Palin. Palin imitation by Tina Fey. But and then we'll get to the movies. Are we going to do our top 10 funniest movies?
Top 10 funniest movies.
Yeah.
According to John and Scott.
Okay, here's a clip that I thought was Keith Olbermann, and there was a meeting with McCain with some reporters, and McCain in this, I'm just going to play the clip of what he said about being a dictator. It's very similar to something Bush said to be a joke. We'll have to provide the link because there's more to it where you see him getting really fucking irritated with people asking him about his honesty. And you could see in the video, you got to see his body language. He's like, I don't have to answer these fucking questions, you fucking little weasels. How dare you? question my honesty. I didn't have a kitchen table, God damn it. Anyway, here's a clip of him saying he should be a dictator.
John McCain sat down yesterday with the editorial board of the Des Moines Register in Iowa. He had a strategy here that apparently included opening with a dictator joke during a discussion of the bailout. And it kind of went downhill from there.
This is just a not acceptable situation. I'm not saying this is the perfect answer. If I were a dictator, which I always aspire to be, I would write it very different, you know, a little bit differently.
Very or no, a little bit?
No.
He's starting to whistle now when he talks.
So, my friends.
My friends.
Yeah. You know, that's going to be an Obama ad. I should be a dictator. Oh, my God. Anyways, Palin's been stumping, hitting the stump, and this is what she's been saying about Obama lately.
Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin has lobbed a new charge at Democrat Barack Obama.
Our opponent is someone who sees America as imperfect enough to pal around with terrorists who targeted their own country.
Palin made the charge at three separate events in California Saturday.
I was reading today a copy of the New York Times. Turns out one of his earliest supporters is a man who, according to the New York Times, was a domestic terrorist and part of a group that, quote, launched a campaign of bombings that would target the Pentagon and the U.S. Capitol.
That article analyzed the relationship between Obama and Bill Ayers. Ayers was a founder of a 1960s radical group called the Weather Underground, which was blamed for several bombings. They include a pipe bomb in San Francisco that killed a police officer and injured another. Obama was a child when the group was active, and he's denounced Ayers' radical views and activities. They do live in the same Chicago neighborhood and served on a charity board together and had a fleeting political connection. Neither the Associated Press or the New York Times found evidence to suggest that the two men palled around, and it's simply wrong to suggest that they were associated while Ayers was committing terrorist acts.
At any cost, Scott.
Yeah,
palling at any cost. Around with terrorists.
Palling around.
Palling around. Unbelievable. And then Fox News wanted to weigh in on the debates. This is what they had to say.
She talked a great deal about some of the parts of her past interviews that were considered sort of missteps or awkward. She talked about her performance last night, said that she thought she was able to go after Obama and Biden as what she deemed liberal tax and spenders, but complained that there wasn't actually enough time for her to get her ideas across. Whether or not she's been getting her ideas across adequately in her interviews and her press appearances was one of the questions I asked her, and she did not mince any words about some of the mistakes that she's made and some of the mistakes that she thinks we in the media, and Katie Couric specifically, have made. Here's a little bit of it.
Well, okay, I'll tell you, honestly, the Sarah Palin in those interviews is a little bit annoyed because it's like, man, no matter what you say, you're going to get clobbered. If you choose to answer a question, you're going to get clobbered on the answer. If you choose to try to pivot and go on to another subject that you believe that Americans want to hear about, you get clobbered for that, too. But in those Katie Couric interviews, I did feel that there were a lot of things that she was missing in terms of an opportunity to ask what a VP candidate stands for, what the values are represented in our ticket. I wanted to talk about Barack Obama increasing taxes, which will lead to killing jobs. I wanted to talk about his proposal to increase government spending by another $1 trillion. Some of his comments that he's made about the war that I think may, in my world, disqualify someone from consideration as the next commander-in-chief. Some of the comments that he's made about Afghanistan, what we're doing there, supposedly just air raiding villages and killing civilians.
Supposedly.
That's reckless. And I wanted to talk about things like that. So I guess I have to apologize for being a bit annoyed, but that's also an indication of being outside of that Washington elite, outside of the media elite also. And just wanted to talk to Americans without the filter and let them know what we stand for.
Oh, she just shut the fuck
know,
up.
I know, man.
Did she say, did she call herself a bitch?
No.
At some point in there?
I don't know. Maybe. And then Fox had to... Hold on.
Her world. In her world,
yeah.
The things that Obama says would not... he should not run for president. You know what that means, John? That means if when she becomes president, when McCain kicks it, that means censorship. That means for the things you say, you're not going to be getting jobs. You're probably going to be put in jail.
Right.
If she gets in charge.
Right.
That's scary.
But then, and I meant to say it was about the debate, but it wasn't. That was about the Katie Couric interview. I have this one, which was Fox talking about the debate, which I thought this is riveting research that they did. I'm just amazed.
Before you play that, though,
I just want one
comment.
Yeah.
I don't think you can be president if you use the word clobbered.
Clobbered.
Okay.
You get clobbered in the media. Yeah, I was a bit annoyed.
And when you refer to yourself in the third person, I think that those two things, you shouldn't be president. That's my opinion.
But this next Fox clip is unbelievable. It's just excellent observation. It's fantastic journalism.
I can't wait. I'm riveted.
Yeah, for the first time, I was amazed at how much detail, how much they paid attention to the debate. Here it is.
But there is a clear winner this morning, and it is completely subjective. Take a look. We've got a side-by-side comparison. Examine the flag pins. Joe Biden had a flag pin. Sarah Palin had a flag pin. As you can see, hers is screen right. His is screen left. Hers is about three times the size of his. So I would say flag pin wise, she is a hand down.
She's got a few more jewels on hers, too.
Yeah, she does.
Got a pair of jewels on hers.
Yeah, she does.
Now, just for the record, Fox did not mention that Barack wore a flag pin, but McCain did not during their debate.
Of course, he doesn't have to wear one, John. He didn't have a kitchen table for
5 years.
He didn't
have a kitchen table. Why would he have a flag pin?
Right.
But 12 houses. Anyways, Letterman, he wanted to weigh in on the debate, and he put together some bits. To be fair, he spliced together some things that Sarah Palin said to make it for comic relief. But the very end of this bit, they do a debate recap, and there was a great SNL bit where Tina Fey was doing Palin, and she was there. Must have been people talking about drinking games. How many times she would say Maverick? And how many beers you'd have to down for every time she said Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is Letterman's take on Palin.
But now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a special message from the governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin.
Oh, good.
Sarah?
Oh, man, it's so obvious that I'm not ready to be vice president.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here, this just in, another message from Sarah Palin. Sarah, take it away.
But I will tell Americans straight up that I don't know what a vice president does.
Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for another message from Sarah Palin. Sarah?
I have no experience. John McCain should get rid of me.
It's time for something we call Sarah Palin Debate Recap.
Joe Sixpack, hockey moms. I say it ain't so, Joe. There you'll go again. Doggone it. Nuclear weaponry. Darn right. And I'll bet you darn right. And there's a shout out to all those third graders at Gladyswood Elementary School. Drill, baby, drill. John McCain's maverick, consummate maverick. Send the maverick from the Senate and put him in the White House. And I've joined this team that is a team of mavericks. What do you expect? A team of mavericks. A stinking corpse.
I thought that was funny. You didn't laugh.
Uh-huh. It's good, yes, man. Yeah. It's good. Yeah.
Did you see SNL at all?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you laugh? I fucking laughed out loud.
I think I did it one part.
Queen Latifah playing Gwen, the moderator
Eiffel.
Chick. Gwen Eiffel. Oh, my God. When Tina Fey did Sarah Palin and they cut back to Gwen Eiffel or Queen Latifah, the look on her face. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Priceless.
Dude, it's got to be one of the funniest Saturday Night Lives I've ever seen. Here's a clip of it.
Governor Palin, how will your administration deal with the current financial crisis?
Well, first of all, let me say how nice it is to meet Joe Biden. And may I say, up close, your hair plugs don't look nearly as bad as everyone says. You know, John McCain and I, we're a couple of mavericks. And gosh darn it, we're going to take that maverick energy right to Washington, and we're going to use it to fix this financial crisis and everything else that's plaguing this great country of ours.
How will you solve the financial crisis being a maverick?
You know, we're going to take every aspect of the crisis and look at it, and then we're going to ask ourselves, what would a maverick do in this situation? And then, you know, we'll do that.
It's good.
It's good, man.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. Tina Fey's dead on, man.
Right on. Tina Fey's dead on.
I wouldn't know if it was her or if it was Paley.
Yeah, I got more clips, but I'm not going to play them. Just Google SNL Biden. Well, I'm sure everybody's seen him.
So what do you want to do?
That's pretty cool. We should play a couple of tunes because I got to take a whiz.
Let me get some emails. I got some emails, and then we'll play some tunes and then come back with the top 10.
Yeah.
Andrew let us know that the TTN forum was getting spammed.
Really?
Yeah. So I went there, and I got to tell you, if I got to deal with that shit, I'm just going to shut the forum down. I mean, I've had it.
You know, I'll check it out.
I cleaned some shit up.
The biggest baby,
right?
Man.
But
I
when we get these new accounts, I don't want to have to work. And I activate them. I don't.
You're the laziest for.
Aren't I?
Guy who runs like 500 miles a day.
That's not true.
Runs on a treadmill, works out, does all this physical activity to just. Sit there and deal with a little bit of spam.
Well, what it is, it's not the dealing with the spam. I'm just so disgusted that people would use this means of communication to promote Viagra or whatever.
Yeah, right.
It just appalls me. It disgusts me. And spammers disgust me. And it just makes me just... I'm already cynical, John. It just makes me more cynical.
Cynical or skeptical?
Cynical.
All right, what do you want to listen to?
Hold on. I got one more email. It's from Jeremy Weber.
All right.
Hey, guys, my name is Jeremy, but you may know me as Square State Samurai.
Ah.
From the Mediocre Show.
Right.
Do you know him from
no,
the...
No, yeah, I'm me just neither. Saying that.
He's a longtime listener, first-time writer. So he talks about Palin, right?
Yeah.
And I think he makes a good point here. He talked about the debates, and then he says, Palin did seem to hold her own when it came to talking energy. Palin seems to know so darn much about oil, but where does she think it comes from? Isn't Sarah a creationist? How old does she think the oil is? Millions of years and thousands of years. Which one? She said that global warming has nothing to do with man and that it's simply a warmer period in our Earth cycle, but how long has the cycle been happening? 4.5 billion years or 6,000 years that she believes in? How can we take her seriously on any of these issues? I can't take her seriously as a fucking human being. But the problem is, here's the problem. Once you buy into the creationist thing in the 6,000 years old, God put the oil there. Okay? That's how you explain it. God put the oil there. God's making it warmer. That's how you explain things when you come from that mindset. And that's how these idiots are going to vote for her because they have the same dumbass mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got one thing to say to her, right?
Don't right we? On. Yeah.
You fucking bitch!
Yeah.
I even think that's insulting to bitches because she's not even a bitch.
She's not even.
Yeah, it's insulting to bitches to call her
cunt.
A bitch.
A credit card.
Because there's nothing going on up there.
Nothing.
You know, in the one clip you played where she talked about she didn't get to express her ideas. Wouldn't you just love to hear her ideas, like uncensored?
Well, they asked her a specific question, and what's your idea on this? And then a follow-up question. What's the problem? You could say, well, you know what? I really don't know. I'll have to get back to you. Instead of going on and
looking down
at her notes, you should have seen there's a video out there of her during the debate where she is studying. They didn't do a side-by-side, and that's one of the things the debate people didn't like. They did it with Obama and McCain, but they didn't do it with Biden and Palin, the side-by-side video. So when one's talking, you're watching the other one's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it.
She was reading.
She was reading her
3x5 Favre cards.
Yeah. And there is like video out there that shows the side by side, and you see her, and she's fucking looking it up. It's great. Anyways,
they should have just given her a little earpiece like the during his debate.
So what are we doing? Blowing in the Wind and then Billie Jean or
whatever you want, man.
All right, let's
whatever
do that.
You want. All right, then.
It's like 5 minutes worth.
Then we'll get into movies.
So I got to take a whiz.
Whiz.
All right, this is from practice. This is our take on two songs, kind of a Me First, Gimme Gimme's interpreted versions, and one's a debates inversion. It's an inversion, isn't it?
It is an inversion.
Yeah, check it out, man. Check it out.
Answer my friends, he's blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Love Practice, man.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, dude. No doubt, man.
I think that's the first time we got through that song.
Yeah, completely.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Tits, man.
Yeah.
Tits.
I like that version.
Right on, John. Right on.
Oh.
All right, you ready for the top 10?
I had to piss so bad.
Funniest movies of all time, according to John and Scott.
John and Scott.
Interesting thing about my movies is it's about a 20-year period. All of them were made within 20 years.
Really?
Yeah. My top 10. I noticed that when I was compiling statistics. Yes. The earliest one is from 1974. I think, yeah.
Wow.
1974. The latest one is from, I have it right here, 1983? No, 1994. So, all my top 10 are from 1974 to 1994.
Wow.
They all fall within that period.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, uh-oh. Okay, get the dating game theme up.
God damn it. One of mine won't play.
And we can get in. Oh, before we get into this, here's some movie news, John. Movie news. Harrison Ford said Friday that momentum is building for a fifth movie in the Indiana Jones franchise.
No.
And that George Lucas is already cooking up a suitable plot. A suitable plot for a heroic senior citizen with a penchant for whips and fedoras.
Wow.
It's crazy but great, the 66-year-old Ford said. George is in think mode right now. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull grossed $318 million.
Wow.
In the U.S. and $770 million worldwide.
How much did it cost to make?
I have no idea. They expect it to be a powerhouse seller on DVD and Blu-ray when it hits stores October 14th. Who's going to buy that piece of shit? Are you going to buy it? I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I thought it was okay.
I thought it was horrible.
My kids loved it, man.
You know, I heard, I love Alien and I love Aliens. And then somebody told me the plot for Alien 3, and I refuse to see it. I won't see it.
Oh. Yeah. I hear you.
And that's the same with this. I saw this at a hotel.
All right, let's get to it, man.
And I hated it, and I will never spend another dime on it.
Don't be such a baby. Don't all be right, such then. A pussy.
I'm ready. Are you going to start out with your number 10?
Yeah, I'll start out with my number 10.
Number 10, John's
and I hope
number
this,
10.
I hope this clip plays right.
Okay.
Got Bush. Oh, wow. We've got Bush.
Oh, hell pie.
Okay, okay, Takashi, now show me your cards.
Okay, 2 and 4 kings. That's good, yes?
No, no, you got too many kings.
Oh.
So you gotta get rid of these. Here, oh. I'll take 3 of these kings.
Hey, guys. Wonder joints.
I know
okay,
what
Takashi,
it is.
What do you got?
Well, I think I have a frush.
What the fuck is a frush?
Frush?
Oh, well, see, I got 2 sevens, and 2 sevens beats a frush.
This is bullshit. I want Bush. Pan down.
Nice. What the fuck is a frush?
A frush.
This is the first movie I've ever seen high.
Really?
Yeah. 1984. Revenge of the Nerds.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Revenge of the Nerds, an American comedy film starring Robert Carradine, of all people, Anthony Edwards, with Curtis Armstrong, Ted McGinley, Julia Montgomery, Brian Toshi, Larry B. Scott, John Goodman, who plays the coach. And the film was directed by Jeff Kanu. It chronicles the story of a group of nerds trying to stop harassment by the persecuting jock fraternity, the Alpha Betas. And it was filmed at the University of Arizona in Tucson, Scott.
Did nice. You know that? Yeah, yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. That is a great, great movie.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Yeah. Didn't make my top 10.
Really?
But it is a great, great
movie. It's number 91 in, of on Bravo's 100 Funniest Movies.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A remake of the original Revenge of the Nerds was slated for release in 2007. However, the project was canceled in 2006.
Why?
I don't know. It didn't say. Oh. But yeah, and I got to make a note. None of my movies, because there were movies that were favorite comedies of mine, but they also overlapped into themes. So
other genres.
Instance, other genres. Like we talked about best Christmas movies
right.
or songs or whatever. Did we do a top 10 Christmas?
I think we did.
Yeah, so, you know, like Christmas Vacation and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles didn't appear on this list, although they would have easily bumped some of the other ones off.
I see. Very good. Are you finished with your number 10? So
yes,
we can get to my
I am
number
finished
10?
With my number 10, Scott.
I would like some Dating Game background music or something like that while I talk about, first of all, my honorable mentions, of course.
Oh,
and then I get
fuck.
To my number 10.
Oh,
here are some of the movies that did not make my number 10, but I think they are great, funny, funny movies. Revenge of the Nerds, honorable mention. Blues Brothers, honorable mention.
What? You are an idiot.
Stripes, honorable mention.
You are a lame
Top
ass.
Top Secret with Val Kilmer, honorable
oh,
mention.
That was the dumbest movie ever.
Office Space, honorable mention. Airplane, honorable mention. Man with Two Brains, honorable mention. Clueless.
Yeah, that's what you are. Clueless.
Into my honorable mention.
Tetanus.
And
that's
probably,
my favorite one, Tetanus, the new movie.
I had a hard time putting this in my top 10, so it is an honorable mention, but I did want to mention it because it was probably the movie I laughed hardest at ever, but that's because I was high. Toxic Avenger.
Oh, my God.
That's honorable mention. All right, my top 10, John.
Yeah.
The original cut of the movie was almost twice as long as the final cut. And it was considered by all involved to be an abysmal failure. It was only after a marathon cutting session that they produced the final cut of the film. which both the main actor and the director considered to be far superior to the original product. At one point, they noted that for every joke that worked, there were three that fell flat. So they went in and trimmed all the jokes that didn't work. Go ahead and play my number 10 movie clip, John.
Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be
this movie sucked.
Angry. Abby someone. Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
You gave me this movie as a gift. Didn't
That's
I re-gift it back
movie,
to you?
Did you? You ass. Actually, this is interesting because this is the highest rated one of my comedies in the top 10 on IMDb. It comes in at an 8.0. It was made in 1974. Of course, that's Mel Brooks. You heard Gene Wilder as Dr. Frankenstein.
I know, but you know me. I'm not into the dialogue as much as I am into... I need a little slapstick in there. And there wasn't enough.
Right.
Except when... I don't think... no.
There was some with the guy...
What, Marty Feldman's eyes?
No. The head of the police in the town. He had some slap shtick because he had that wooden arm. And then there was the great scene with Frankenstein played by Peter Boyle.
Frankenstein!
And Gene Hackman.
Yeah, I've seen the movie three times. But it's just... it's I end up falling asleep watching it.
Here's what puts it in the top 10 for me. I think it's a funny movie. I think it's a great parody or whatever. But again, it's like kind of cheating because you're taking an original idea and just twisting it a little bit. But what puts it in the top 10 for me is a young Terry Garr.
It's supposed to be top 10 comedy, not top 10 beat-off movies. Come on.
Terry Garr and... Madeline Kahn, is that her name? Yes.
Yeah.
I like that movie. Yes. Top 10. Number 10.
Number 10.
Number 10 on Scott's list. Let's move on to number 9 from John.
I go to the clip right away.
Go to the clip.
And I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new...
Wrong one.
What the hell kind of cop are you?
You know what I am? I'm your worst fucking nightmare, man. I'm a nigga with a badge. That means I got permission to kick your fucking ass whenever I feel like it. And I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Reggie Hammond. Y'all be cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
Y'all be cool.
Right on.
48 hours for me, Scott. Number
Reggie
9.
Hammond.
You know why? Because, there's quality kills in it, and it's funny. I was laughing my ass off in the theater, and people were looking at me like, that's not funny. It's not funny when people get shot. It is when they bitch about it. 1982 action comedy film directed by Walter Hill, starring Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy as a cop and convict, respectively, who team up to catch a cop killer. The title refers to the amount of time they have to solve the crime, Scott.
48 hours.
48 hours.
Yes, and the you were introduced to Eddie Murphy singing a police song in the jail cell.
Yeah. Roxanne! Yeah. Clint Eastwood was originally approached to play Sergeant Jack Cates, and Richard Pryor was set for the role of Reggie Hammond. Eastwood wanted to play the criminal role and ended up playing one in Escape from Alcatraz instead.
I see.
Yeah. As a result, 48 Hours went into limbo for 2 years. Then Gordon called Hill and asked him if he would like to film with Nick Nolte as Cates.
It's just me, you, and Gans.
Yeah. Sorry about the watermelon and the fried chicken thing. I thought it was great. Yeah. I love that movie.
Yeah.
That's one of those... commercials and all, I can fucking watch it every time.
Every time.
Every time.
It was too violent for me to put on the top 10.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, they said something about that. They thought it was wasn't going to go over so well with the hotel scene. They said, according, Gross wrote more material tailored to Nolte and Eddie Murphy's personalities. By Hill's account, they rewrote Murphy's character right to the very last day of shooting. Executives also found the footage of the gunfight in the hotel to be too violent and were worried that it would kill the film's humor. Not for me, man. They told Hill that he would never work for Paramount again as a result.
Even after the box office tally came in?
Yeah, they didn't say.
Douches.
But yeah, that's my my number nine, Scott, is 48 Hours.
A very admirable number nine. Here's my number nine, John. This was made in 1982. It had a 7.2 rating on IMDb. Go ahead and play the clip.
Oh, now we're playing the clip first.
Play the clip first, and then
I messing the format.
Yes,
up,
I am screwing up with the format.
It's like filming with you in a
it
movie.
Is.
Do we need a sound? What's the direction here? What's the? Hey, man, I don't need it. It's all up here, man. A storyboard. How about a storyboard? Hey, man, it's all up here, man. Well, what about the rest of us?
Yes?
Yeah, I'm registered in this class.
What class?
This is U.S. history. See the globe right there.
Really?
Hey. May I come in?
Oh, please. I get so lonely when I hear that third attendance bell ring and all my kids are not here.
Oh. You fag! I totally forgot about this
That's
movie.
That's right, John. Now, my number nine.
God damn it!
Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I don't know if you know this, but Nicolas Cage was originally considered for the role of Brad Hamilton.
And he wasn't Nicolas Cage back then, my friend.
Yeah, he was a Coppola, right?
Yeah, Nicolas Coppola.
But after his audition, the studio thought his performance was too dark, and the role went instead to Judge Reinhold. Additionally, Cage was 17 at the time and could not work as many hours as actors over 18. Also, the original role of Mr. Hand was offered to Fred Gwynn, Herman Munster.
Ah, that wouldn't have gone. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Who turned it down due to his objections over the tone and of the sexual content of the film.
Two Utes.
During the shooting of the film, Sean Penn got so into character that he only answered as Spicoli. In fact, the door of his dressing room was labeled Spicoli.
Those guys are fags!
Instead of Sean Penn.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
And
Phoebe Cates naked.
Oh, that's one of the best scenes ever.
Getting
ever.
Jerking off and he gets caught.
Well, I have a little trivia about that scene.
Yeah.
For his masturbation scene, Judge Reinhold brought a large dildo to work. Unbeknownst to the rest of the cast, Phoebe Cates' look of horror and disgust is very real.
Nice. I like that. You don't need... That's not acting.
That is not acting. That's right. That is for real.
All right, let's go on to my number eight, my friend. Here's my number eight.
37. My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
That's all I got, man. Want to hear it again?
37. My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
I know what that is.
In a row? 37 dicks. That's right, Scott. Clerks.
That's right, John. Clerks.
1994 film written and directed by Kevin Smith, who also appears in the film in a minor role. And here's the deal.
Yes.
Joe, who was one of our, was our first guest on the show.
Yes.
14 years ago. He's the one that talked me into going to see this. I never even heard about this movie. And he goes, dude, we got to see it, man. We got to see it. Of course, we were medicated. I believe we got medicated. It was a Sony theater. You remember that Sony theater?
Out
there by in Roselle?
I don't remember
that.
Yeah,
you do.
I don't. I never went to Roselle.
Yeah, it was the only Sony theater.
Never heard of
it. We've
been
there to see movies.
No.
Okay, anyway, so we went there and got medicated in the parking lot, went inside. I did not know anything about this movie. Joe said, we got to see it. It was like a Cannes Film Festival sensation. I'm like, okay, whatever, dude. We're not doing nothing. I'll go with you. I fucking laughed my ass off. at this movie. I love this movie.
Clerks.
Yeah, and he hasn't done anything good since.
Nothing.
Except Chasing Amy.
Oh, that blue Chasing Amy. That's not on your top 10, is it?
No, but there's just one great line in that movie where he draws Santa Claus and the lesbian, and it's great. Anyway, well, it's, you know, it's kind of deals with comic books, so I like it.
All right, John, that was your number
eight.
Yeah,
starring Brian O'Hanlon as Dante Hicks. And, yeah, what was it? It cost $27,000 to make.
Nice.
Grossed over $3 million in theaters, launching Smith's career.
And what did it do on DVD?
Invigorating the field of independent film. I don't know. But that's my number eight, Scott.
My number eight, John, was made in 1984. It came in at a 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb. Nice. Go ahead and play number eight.
All right.
Numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board. 11, oh, 11,
and most
11.
And amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it?
That's right, John.
Another one Joe took me to, which I fell asleep
this
watching.
This is a Spinal
the
Tap.
Dumbest movie I've ever seen.
Harry Shearer, Rob Reiner, Christopher Guest, and Michael McKean were given $10,000 to write a script. They made a 20-minute version of the film with the money to better demonstrate their improvisation they had in mind. Several scenes from this demo are in the final movie, John.
Yeah.
It's ranked number one on Entertainment Weekly's top 50 cult films of all time.
Yeah, didn't they rip off some British show?
Not that I'm aware of, John. Premiere voted this movie as one of the 50 greatest comedies of all time in 2006. That's right, John. A movie about a fictional rock band, a rockumentary, if you will. This is Spinal Tap is my number eight movie.
They ripped off somebody. Who was it? I want to say Replacements, but that's not it. I forget the name of the show. Phil would know.
That is my number eight, John.
Phil the bass player.
My number eight.
Phil the bass player would
this
know.
This is Spinal Tap.
All right, this is my number seven. My number seven, Scott.
John's number seven.
My number seven.
You come off it, Walter. You're not even fucking Jewish, man.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You're fucking Polish Catholic.
What the fuck are you talking about? I converted when I married Cynthia. Yeah. Come on, dude.
Yeah.
You know this.
Yeah, and five fucking years ago, you were divorced.
So what do you say? When you get divorced, you turn in your library card, you get a new license, you stop being Jewish?
Do you know what that is, Scott?
Yeah, dude.
Dude. That's right. That's right, man. The Big Lebowski is my number seven. Now, it wouldn't have made the list if I hadn't have just picked it up, because Rick was talking about it one day. He was quoting lines from it. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't really like that movie. Then I went and bought the DVD, and I just sat down one night and, you know, had nothing to do, popped it in, and I fucking laughed so goddamn hard watching that movie. And I watched it again. Because I just couldn't believe some of the shit I was watching and why I didn't like it the first time.
It was a 10-year anniversary just not long ago, right?
That's what I think I bought it for. And, dude, it is fucked up, man. That movie is so goddamn funny. And there's that crazy psychedelic scene and the part that made me laugh so hard that I rewound like 20 times. It's when he's driving in his car and he drops the roach between his legs and it's burning him, and he pours the beer on his crotch to put it out, and he crashes right into like a telephone pole or whatever it was, a garbage can. I think I'm rewinding it, man. See, for me, it's got to be the unexpected slapstick, you know? Hello?
I see. Very good. Yeah. Very good. Yes.
So, you know, when you get hit in the head with a giant soccer ball, you know, when you're going for broke.
Right, when I'm going.
That shit, it's ingrained in my brain.
And then
forever.
On top of that, when I go to kick the ball and my foot rolls down. Over the top and I fall down.
But people got to realize this ball was like 3 feet across. The size of it was ginormous. It was like a promotional soccer ball for the World Cup.
Boy, how many years ago was
whipped
that?
Whipped in your head. It was like the Spruder film, man.
All right, John, that was your number seven. Number seven.
I'm going to go for broke here.
You know, that line, I'm going to go for broke, is from one of the movies on my list.
Ah, wow.
This is my number seven,
all right.
John. My number seven. Go ahead and play the clip of my number seven.
In this case, I think we have to go all out. I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part. We're just the guys to do it.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a poster of that one up in your basement.
No
That's
doubt,
right, John.
Man.
My number seven movie.
No doubt.
Cue the music, please.
What music?
The backing track music that we've been...
Oh, sorry.
My number seven, John, of course, is the great, great movie made in 1978. Has a 7.6 out of 10 rating. Animal House, John.
Yeah.
Animal House. This is the feature film debut of a John Belushi. Not only that, it's Karen Allen's first movie, John. She went on to Indiana Jones fame. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I kind of fell in love with her in another movie. It was about a bunch of altar boys. I forget the name of the fucking movie. God damn it.
What
One
really
of them was jerking
it,
off in the movie.
For me. Is Otter. I think Otter's performance was outstanding. I love the Otter. I love John Belushi, of course.
Right.
But the whole camaraderie of that fraternity and, and the different characters that made him up, the hazing, the non-traditional fraternity, if you will, John.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, before Donald Sutherland was brought on board, John Belushi was the highest paid actor in the cast. At 40 G's. Belushi made 40 G's. Sutherland was so convinced of the movie's lack of potential that when offered a percentage of the gross or an upfront payment, he chose the upfront payment of $45,000. If he had taken the gross, it would have been... It would have been worth an additional $30 to $40 million.
Wow.
You think he regrets that decision?
Yeah, I think so.
John Landis has stated that his original choice for the role of Boone and Otter were Bill Murray and Chevy Chase. Neither could be signed on for the movie because of scheduling. Plus, they fucking hated each other.
Yeah.
But I don't think Chevy Chase could have done a good a job.
No, they weren't young enough either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think Boone and Otter were correctly cast. Definitely.
I mean, Belushi definitely works because...
He's been there for eight years.
Yeah, and like a really hairy guy that's like old looking, you know, so he works out. But you can't have too many of them.
Right.
Like all of them have been there 8 years. They call them doctors.
That's right. Practicing.
All right, my number six.
That was my number seven, John.
Yeah,
Animal
I'm
House.
On a six, right?
Six, that is right.
I'm on a six. My number six, it's. I really thought this movie was really funny, but after you played Fast Times, I'm thinking, boy, I should have put that as number six, but I put this one instead.
What's that bubble there?
What do you think? It's a...
Well, how the hell did you get the beans above the frack? I mean,
I don't know. It wasn't like it was a well-thought-out plan.
I have no idea
what
no
that idea?
Is.
The
None.
Beans above the frack, Scott.
Still no idea.
You have no idea?
None. No. That's me.
It's Something About Mary.
Oh, yes. Something.
That wasn't even on any year list.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
That baby, 1998 romantic comedy. Yeah, I don't know if you heard of it, by the Farley Brothers.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
With Ben Stiller, Cameron Diaz, Matt Dillon. Oh,
and
my
Brett
God.
And Brett Favre. John,
yeah,
don't
that
forget
movie
Brett Favre.
Is fucking hilarious. It's a gross-out film.
It is.
It's a sleeper hit, Scott.
Sleeper.
It was the third highest-grossing movie in 1998 in North America. The highest-grossing comedy, and it kept catapulted Stiller into the limelight until Wedding Crashers was released in 2005 with God damn it, I didn't put it on my list. There's Something About Mary was the most successful youth-aimed R-rated comedy film at the box office. The movie has made $176 million in the U.S. alone and $369 million worldwide.
Yeah, you know, there's. I think that Cameron Diaz. I don't know if she was nominated or not. She should have been, in my opinion. She carried that whole movie.
Yeah.
If her performance wasn't as good as it was, nothing else would have worked.
Well, it was rated. It was voted fourth greatest comedy film of all time.
Really? By who?
By the Total Film Magazine. By
Total Film Magazine. Yeah. Never heard of it.
Readers of Total Film.
Readers of Total Film.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Never heard of that. Yeah.
Okay,
right.
Okay. Because you didn't.
Yeah,
hear
I
of
didn't
it.
Hear of it.
The great Scott didn't hear of it.
Not only didn't I hear the magazine, but the readers of this magazine voted for it. That means nothing to me. Nothing.
All right. Total Film Magazine, Scott. Number four.
Number four?
Number six on my
list. Okay. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's get to your stupid
number six, John. Go ahead and play clip number six.
Clip number six. Number six. Which one is your clip number six?
I feel good today, Sal Bob. We're going to make some money. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to that party. We're going to get some pussy. And I'm going to fuck this bitch. I'm going to fuck this bitch. I'll fuck anything that moves.
That's right, John. Mine is the 1994.
Oh, sorry. I keep hitting the wrong button.
One that was already, you already mentioned on your top 10, 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb. My number six is Clerks, John.
Ah.
So let me just, you've already talked about it, so let me just add a couple of trivia. Jason Mewes was left off the cover and poster because executives believed him to be too odd-looking for advertising.
He's weird. I've seen him in person.
Despite having almost no violence in the film, except a fight between Dante and Randall, it was originally given an NC-17 rating based solely on its graphic dialogue. Miramax hired attorney Alan Dershowitz of O.J. Simpson fame, who successfully petitioned the MPA to lower its rating to an R without any cuts.
Wow.
Silent Bob is not so silent. In Clerks and Mallrats 95, he speaks only once, but in Dogma, he speaks twice. In Chasing Amy 1997, he was quite a long speech. And Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, he becomes almost chatty. And for me, that's what ruined the Clerk franchise and these two characters.
Yeah.
The first one, I thought he was great. After that, he still didn't say much, but he was like this pantomime. He was a mime, and it was annoying as hell. And that's what ruined it for me, the other movies. This movie was named one of the 20 most overrated movies of all time by Premiere.
Premiere, what's that?
That's a magazine.
I never heard of it.
You should have, if you know anything about movies.
Yeah, okay.
The word fuck and its derivatives are said 91 times throughout the film, mostly by Dante and Jay.
You fucking bitch!
Coming in at number six, Clerks. Kevin Smith.
Great, great. Here's my number five.
Number five.
Oh, that's the wrong one. This is my number five.
You know, Bill, there's one thing I've learned in all my years. Sometimes you gotta say, what the fuck? Make your move.
I beg your pardon?
So, how we doing?
Looks like University of Illinois.
Is that clip speeded up?
No. That's Tom Cruise, man.
Talking like this.
He was like 12 when he did that movie, man. Looks like University of Illinois. Dude, when I saw this movie, he was my fucking idol.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I thought this was the greatest movie of all time.
Okay, but this is the top 10 greatest comedies of all time.
Yeah, it was the greatest comedy of all time. When he banged that chick on the train.
And that's funny to you? That's funny.
No, the movie was fun. It's a comedy, dude. But
tell me the comedy.
What do you mean?
Which part was funny?
The whole Miles and him going into the, you know, getting everybody to you know... to buy the hookers, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
1983 comedy film
you
written by
Paul
Brickman.
You said you like slapstick. Where's the slapstick?
Well, I mean, he's driving around. They're getting, you know, Miles as a trig midterm, and they're being chased by Guido, the killer pimp. And they throw the Porsche goes into the river, you know. What do you mean, where's the slapstick?
Yeah, I just don't see the funny. I don't know where the funny is.
You didn't think that movie was funny?
I liked the movie. I just didn't think it was funny.
What'd you think it was? A fucking drama?
Yeah, I thought it was like Terms of Endearment.
Oh, yeah, okay. Did you cry at some point?
Yes.
Yeah, did you pet your wet pussy?
All I'm saying is that movie never would have crossed my mind. Even if you had mentioned it to me, I would have come up with 100 movies before that one.
Really?
Funnier than Risky Business.
Oh, yeah. Frankenstein. That's real funny.
Young Frankenstein. Yeah. All right.
Oh, sorry. I mixed it up with old Frankenstein.
Yeah, the original.
The middle-aged Frankenstein. And young. What's next?
Right.
Preteen, prepubescent Frankenstein.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, The Dark Knight is funnier than Risky Business.
Abnormal.
He slams his head on
the
table.
That's a funny joke.
I'm going to watch a pencil disappear. Boom. That's funnier than Risky Business.
That's a good comedy. I would say that's comedy.
Yeah. Why is that on your list?
No. not yet, but I might put it on there. Abnormal.
All right, John.
What's
that
next?
Was
Blazing
your
Saddles?
Number five was your... Was Risky Business.
I'm gonna stab you in the heart if you got any Monty Python, you're dead.
What about Adam Sandler? How about that, huh?
You're dead too.
Go ahead and play my number five clip, John.
Very important. I forgot to tell you. What? Don't cross the streams. Why? It would be bad.
I'm fuzzy on the whole good bad thing. What do you mean bad?
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total protonic reversal.
Right, that's bad. Okay. All right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon.
I was going to put that on my list, but I thought I had way too many Harold Ramis films in a row.
That's right, John. My number five was made in 1984, 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb. Ghostbusters, John. Ghostbusters.
Nice.
I don't know if you know this, but the role of Peter Venkman was originally written for John Belushi.
It's Dr. Venkman. Oh, he couldn't have pulled it
off.
No,
I don't think
way.
He did. Chevy Chase also turned down the role of Peter Venkman.
No, no way.
He claimed that the script used in the movie wasn't the original script, and the original script was very dark and even more scarier.
Wow. God damn it.
The lines...
I forgot Fletch.
The movie's line, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, was voted as the number 68 of the 100 greatest movie lines by Premiere. Also, the line, well, there's something you don't see every day, was voted as the number 19 line of the 100 greatest movie lines of all time by Premiere Magazine. My number five, John, Ghostbusters.
All right. My number four.
What the fuck happened to the Delta I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the guts? Huh? This could be the greatest night of our lives. But you're gonna let it be the worst.
Oh, we're afraid to go with you, Pluto. We might get in trouble. Well, just kiss my ass from now on! Not me! I'm not gonna take this! Warner, he's a dead man! Marmalade, dead! Niedermeyer!
Dead!
That's right, Scott. Mine's on your list.
That's right, John.
Animal House.
And you have a poster down here.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, you have another poster down here that I think might be on your list.
Really?
Yeah.
Which
we'll
one?
See.
Probably got three of them down here.
Down here.
I don't know. Maybe I have one put away. Yeah, Animal House, man. Same. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Right on.
Harold Ramis. I got to say, Ghostbusters was going to be on my list, but I'm like, yeah, that's, I got way too many Harold Ramises on my list.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. I didn't want to be biased.
Way too many Adam Sandlers on your list.
Well, how many you got?
Zero.
Zero.
As it should be.
I don't have any.
Right on.
But I do have Risky Business. Where's the slapstick of that? Same place as prepubescent Frankenstein. or should I say Frankenstein?
Frankenstein.
It's genius comedy.
It is.
Yeah.
Nice knockers.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
All right, do you have anything else to say about Animal House?
No.
Number four, John.
Yeah.
I have a lot of number four clips for my number four.
Yeah. Yours says number four movie 03.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Oh, 01, 02, 03. Yeah,
Christ.
So you just go play in reverse order, if you will.
I didn't know this was top 16 favorite movies with 47 clips. Which one should I play first?
Count down. So 4, 3, 2, 1. Like
so
that.
3, 2, 1? I only see.
Oh, there's only three? Yeah, 3, 2, 1.
Well,
yeah.
There's three on this show.
Yes.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Oh, my God. You're getting stabbed. Blazing douchebags.
We had them off at the pass. I hate that cliche.
Where did you get these clips, man? You play them with your fucking play school tape recorder?
Hey, I was in a hurry, man. I didn't even get a chance to listen to them. I just had to download them.
My mind is a raging torrent, flooded with rivulets of thought, cascading into a waterfall of creative alternatives.
God darn it, Mr. Lamar. You use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
Every time I watch Blazing Saddles, I laugh as hard as the first time I watched it. The only thing that really doesn't work for me is the very end. But everything else, I think Cleavon Little's performance is outstanding. Gene Wilder is outstanding.
Yeah.
I thought except for the end. Everything else.
I don't like Gene Wilder at all. I never thought that guy was funny at all.
Well, there you go.
The only movie I ever liked him in was Willy Wonka.
Now, that movie sucked.
What?
Because of Gene Wilder.
Oh, my God. That movie was great.
All right, John. The role of Bart was intended for Richard Pryor, but due to the controversial nature of Pryor's stand-up routines of the day, and his background, you know, because he was black.
Right.
Mel Brooks couldn't secure financing for the project with Pryor in the role.
Pryor would have been better.
I disagree.
I would have liked it.
They made Pryor a co-writer. Cleavon Little played Bart. Pryor could not have done better than Cleavon Little.
No way. I disagree.
I totally disagree with you.
I disagree with you.
Mel Brooks also asked Johnny Carson to play the Waco kid. He refused. Production began with Gig Young as the Waco kid. On the first day of shooting, the scene where the drunk Waco kid hangs from a bunk asking if Bart is black, Young revealed that he really was indeed drunk and had an alcohol problem. He proceeded to undergo a physical collapse on set. Brooks shut down production for the day, and Gene Wilder flew cross-country to take over the role.
Nice.
Hedy Lamarr sued Mel Brooks over the use of the name Hedley Lamarr and settled out of court. This is number 9 on Bravo's list of the 100 funniest movies.
Who gives a fuck?
My number four, John. Blazing Saddles, 1974.
All right, my number three. Hopefully this clip plays. Oh, no.
No.
It's not going to play. God damn it.
Why not? Why won't it play?
I couldn't find a clip anywhere, and I don't know why I couldn't find this clip, but I got a clip. It's a WAV file, and it says it's corrupt.
Corrupt. It's a corrupt clip.
I didn't test it. Anyways, I'm not going to play a clip. Who gives a goddamn?
Yeah, who gives a good goddamn?
My number three, Scott.
Number three, John.
The Blues Brothers.
Yes, The Blues Brothers.
1980 musical comedy directed by John Landis and starring John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd as Juliet Jake and Elwood Blues. Characters were developed from a Saturday Night Live musical sketch. It features musical numbers by R&B and soul legends James Brown, Cab Calloway, Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, and John Lee Hooker. And car chase scenes, if you didn't know that. There's some car chase scenes in there.
A couple of them, yeah.
The whole deal is they're on a mission from God. They have to get $5,000 to pay a tax assessor for the Roman Catholic orphanage, which they grew up in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Features also one of my faves, John Candy. And,
yes,
of course, Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny movie. Great movie. My number three, Scott.
One of my favorite scenes is when she tracks him down in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And he finally pulls the glasses down.
Yeah.
And I don't think he says anything. He just,
no,
the whole
that
scene
was,
is
that
with
was
his
my
eyes.
Clip was the whole, you know, she's like, where the fuck were you? You stood me up at the wedding. There was traffic. The dog ate my directions. There was this. There was that. For the love of God! And he looks up at her, then he kisses her and drops her in the mud.
Yeah.
And then she shoots at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did right. she after that?
Yeah. With her AK-47 or AR-15 or M-16, whatever she had.
That's right, John.
Yeah.
All or right,
maybe
then.
She shot first. It's great.
Twiggy was in that movie,
yeah,
too. Twiggy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's up? What's next? What do you got?
My number three, John.
Your number three.
It's my number three. Go ahead and play the clip.
It's hard to find them with all these other
my
clips.
My number three.
Your number three.
Should be in order.
Billy Ray! Feeling good, Lewis!
There you go.
Oh, God damn it.
That is the clip. Now, this one also appeared on
it's
my top
Christmas
10 Christmas
one. Yeah, see?
Movies.
That one.
My number three, made in 1983, is 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, is Trading Places, John. Again, Richard Pryor was originally considered for the role of Billy Ray Valentine, and I think it would have sucked if Richard Pryor was in it. G. Gordon Liddy was offered the part of Clarence Beeks, but turned it down after discovering Beeks's fate. Remember what happens to him?
Yeah.
He gets anally raped by an ape. Don Ameche's strong religious convictions made him uncomfortable with the swearing. This proved a problem for the scene at the end of the movie where he had to shout out, fuck him, to a group of Wall Street executives. When he did act out the scene, it had to be done in one take because Ameche refused to do a second one.
Nice.
That's right, John. My number three, Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and
nice.
Dan
number three.
Aykroyd.
But yeah, I abstained from bringing in themes that we already covered.
Genres.
Genres.
Yes.
Is it genre? Are you sure?
Yes.
Is Christmas a genre?
It's a genre, yes.
I didn't know that. Holiday films.
Well, I read that in Premiere. You probably won't read that in Hot Movies magazine.
Yeah,
or
that was it. Hot Movies.
Whatever that magazine.
You douche. You read that in Premiere? You actually subscribed to a fucking rag?
No, I bought it at the airport.
I noticed that with you. Every single movie, you got to justify it with somebody else saying it was on their top 10 list.
Not everyone.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't on anybody's top 10
list. By the way,
list.
IMDb Rated at number 9.
Well, I give you all the IMDb ratings. My number 2 movie is the lowest rated on IMDb out of my top 10. Can't wait for that, can you?
Oh, yeah.
Lowest rated.
It's got to be great. It's probably Terms of Endearment. It's a comedy!
Actually, Clerks was the highest rated of my top 10 on IMDb. Yeah.
All right, my number 2.
I take that back. Young Frankenstein was the highest rated.
No, there's no way. Bunch of stupid people.
Chicks dig me because I rarely wear underwear, and when I do, it's usually something unusual.
That's right. One of my favorite lines. My number 2 is Stripes. I've seen that movie 4 million times. It is always available on my laptop, and when I'm lonely or whatever, there's only a couple movies I watch. It's either because I travel abroad once in a while, you know, and I want to be brought down to my American roots. So it's either Stripes, 48 Hours, not the Blues Brothers, or Breakfast Club, which didn't make it on my list. I don't know why, but it was funny, but I don't know.
Understood. My favorite line from Stripes.
I thought Risky Business was funny.
My favorite line from Stripes is when they pull up to the recruiting office.
Yeah.
And he gets out of the car, and the cop or the whoever comes over and says, "Hey, you can't park here." And he says, "I'm not parking. I'm abandoning it." It's my favorite one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually got to use that line.
Nice.
When I had a 1980 Nova. And I pulled into a gas station, and I made sure to park it right in front of their...
out of sight.
Garage.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, "Hey, you can't park here." I said, "I'm not parking it. I'm abandoning it."
I'm abandoning it. Nice.
So I gave him my title of the car, and he gave me $25, and that was that. And I walked home.
Nice. All right, what's your number 2?
My number 2, John. Go ahead and play number 2's clip. Number 2.
Can I get my name on the phone book? And now... I'm on your ass. You know, I'll bet more people see that than the phone book.
That's right, John.
What the hell's that? Dude, where's my car?
My number 2 is 1979. It's the lowest rated on IMDb of my 10 movies, 6.9 out of 10. That's right, John.
Off.
The Jerk with Steve Martin. I don't know if you know this, but Bill Murray filmed the cameo that was deleted.
Really?
Yes. Wait a minute. It makes me think of a movie that should be on my honorable mention. Yes, I did mention it. Man with Two Brains on my honorable mention. But this one is my favorite, Sean. Premiere voted this movie as one of the 50 greatest comedies of all time in 2006. According to his book, Born Standing Up, Martin's favorite line in the movie is ad-libbed. When his character is hitchhiking, a man in a truck stops and asks, "St. Louis?" To which Martin replies, "No, Naven Johnson."
That's great, Scott. Brilliant. Great, Scott.
And the great and very sexy Bernadette Peters also in this movie, John.
Nice.
Number 2.
Number
2. The Jerk.
Very nice.
That's right. I think we may have the same number 1 movie.
No.
Yes, I think we do.
Go ahead,
John. What's your number 1?
All right, here's my number 1.
I invented my own kind of grass, too. Did you know that? Look at this. This is registered. Carl Spatter Bent.
Oh, yeah. I've felt grass like this before. I've played on this.
This is a hybrid. This is a cross, bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, featherbed bent, and Northern California Sensimilla. The amazing stuff about this is that you can play 36 holes on it in the afternoon, take it home, and just get stoned in a bejesus belt. That night on his stuff.
You know what that movie is, right?
I think I do, John.
Number 1, Caddyshack for me.
That's also my number 1 movie.
Really?
Yeah, go ahead and play my clip. Did I bring one?
You brought like 14 of them for number 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, you want to make $14 the hard way?
I didn't see a number 2 in my folder here for that one. But you have number 3 and number 1.
Oh, okay. What's number 3?
I just played it.
Hey, you want to make $14 the hard way?
Oh, what's number one?
You want to play $14 the hard way? Number one?
You're drinking too much, Your Excellency.
Excellency fiddlesticks. My name's Fred, and I'm just a man, same as you are.
You're not a man, you're a bishop, for God's sakes!
There is no God.
I forgot about that line, Bishop Bickering.
Caddyshack. Hey, we come to agreement on number one there, John.
That's another movie of mine that is on my laptop. When I want to, you know, feel at home, I put that on. It brings me back, man. I've seen that 40 million times. Caddyshack. They ad-libbed the part. Chevy Chase and Bill Murray hate each other. And Harold Ramis brought them together for dinner one night, and they discussed doing this scene where the two of them, they had no scenes together, and they discussed doing the scene. They had one scene, which is cut from the film, where Bill Murray's driving this gigantic fucking grass lawnmower, but it's like a combine. You know, it's huge with the big blades on it, mm-hmm. and Chevy's trying to play through, and he almost gets his leg chopped off. Anyway, that wasn't in the movie. So Harold Ramis got the two of them together at dinner and said, we really need to, you guys are going to be great. We need you to put something together. So they did that whole scene where he hits the ball, Chevy hits the ball through Carl Spangler's window and wants to play through his dwelling, which is just a fucking, I don't know what
it's
it
a garage.
Is. It's like a garage, yeah. Yeah, so that whole scene was ablib. Yeah.
Ted Knight, Rodney Dangerfield, outstanding. Chevy Chase, in my opinion, this is his greatest role, is Ty Webb from Caddyshack. He just had it all going on.
Yeah.
And then you had Spalding, of course, and
I think Fletch would have been one of my honorable mentions. Did you see that movie?
Probably not.
What? You never saw that?
No. Do you have it? Can I borrow it?
Yeah. It's a Chevy Chase movie. He plays a reporter that's doing some research, and it's quite good. Yeah.
The movie's line, Cinderella story out of nowhere, former greenskeeper, now about to become the Masters champion. It looks like Myrick. It's in the hole. It's in the hole. It's in the hole. Was voted as the 92nd nice. Greatest movie quote by the American Film Institute.
Right.
The movie's line, so I got that going for me, which is nice.
Well, it was number 71 in the American Film Institute.
Number 49.
What?
By Premier Magazine.
Oh, fuck Premier. What about AFI?
Premier voted this movie as one of the 50 greatest comedies of all time in 2006.
Well, it was second on Bravo's 100 Funniest Movies.
And it's number one on our list, John.
That's right.
That's the important
John and Scott.
List. The John and Scott list, which will go down in history.
Yeah. It says, despite the film's reputation as a bona fide cult classic, and its many inclusions on lists of funniest films, reviews at the time of the film's release were generally negative. Gene Shalit called it a hazard, and David Anson of Newsweek wrote that the writers have saddled themselves with a bland hero in a perfunctory drama that will be of interest only to the actor's agents.
Drama?
Yeah.
What, was he focused on...
perfunctory.
The caddy getting the girlfriend pregnant?
I don't know. Maybe perfunctory is the
perfunctory.
The twist, the rub.
The rub.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What does it mean? Yeah. What does that mean? I don't know what it means. What is perfunctory?
I don't know. I don't know what that
means. Let's look it up. It says characterized by routine or superficially lacking in interest or enthusiasm. Yeah, I don't. That's probably the wrong word to use, I guess.
I would think so. Yeah.
Anyways, our top 10 funniest movies of all time.
John there you
and
heard
Scott
it
on TTN.
Right on.
All right, we about ready to wrap it up?
Yeah, I'm ready. I know Phil hasn't shown up, so...
No, I don't think he's coming.
No? What, did he call you?
I got a phone message. I don't...
You did?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it. You can play it?
My cell phone's...
Oh.
Fucked up.
Right, right.
I have to play it
next
week.
Are you sure you can't play it?
I'm trying. Let's see. No. Battery's dead.
Oh, okay. Maybe next week we'll play the Phil phone message on why he didn't show up for
right
episode 145. Douche.
Yeah. What an ass.
Maybe we should get somebody else.
Why does he call the TTN hotline? He calls my fucking cell phone.
You know, it's getting like the Beatles, you know.
Yeah.
I'm getting jealous of Phil's popularity, so I want to kick him out like
Haggis
Pete Best.
Vitae went off, or Vitae. Vitae? Vitae. Went all ape shit about him. Yeah.
Well, you get the- yeah, and that pisses us off.
Why is it making you laugh?
Ape shit about us.
Why are you so laughing?
So we want to kick him out. He's like Pete Best. We're like John and Paul, and he's Pete Best. He's too good looking.
I am drunk. All right.
It's 145,
yeah,
John, wrapped up.
140.
Oh, one thing we didn't mention, OJ. He's looking at...
Oh, yeah, life. Maybe.
Life.
Yeah.
For armed robbery in Las Vegas.
Kidnapping.
To steal his own memorabilia. What a dumbass. Yeah,
what kind of a rap? You know, here's a guy...
Who should be in jail already.
Be in jail, and he gets away with it, and he just can't fucking seem to keep his shit clean.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
But imagine what it's like to be him. So you convince yourself that you didn't kill these two people, and then a jury acquits you. You would think you were untouchable.
Yeah.
I mean,
it could be.
Especially going through that case where there's DNA evidence, there's all this evidence against you, and you get off. You would start to believe that
right.
You are untouchable, that nothing, nobody can touch you. You can't
right.
go to jail for anything. If they don't put me to jail for this, I can do whatever I want. Nobody's going to put me in jail.
Right.
And that's the kind of mindset that got him in trouble.
Yeah.
Dumbass. Great running back, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really athletically gifted running back.
Funny and...
Fun to watch.
What was that movie he was in?
Naked Gun?
Naked Gun.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Police something.
Police Academy with Steve Guttenberg.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know why that wasn't on my list.
Police Story? I don't know. Yeah. Not a very memorable.
No.
All right, that's
I think it was
it.
Naked Gun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it? All right. Total Talk Nonsense with John Scott. I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And that's it for this week, man.
Episode 145.
Yeah.
Are we going to have to put that out in stereo because of the hot...
No, it's 233, man. It'd be like a 7,000 megabyte...
Oh, all right, then.
...download.
So you're not going to get to hear the drums, John's drums in stereo, then.
What drums?
From the practice tunes.
Oh, that's all right.
That's all right, yeah. All right,
All right. Say bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to John and Scott on Total Talk Nonsense.